Welcome to a special Olympics edition of Relatively Football, coming at you straight after the quarterfinals. No, we didn't do any group game podcast because group games are for losers. Now we're in the knockout stages. This is where the real magic happens. This is where the real action takes place. Theo's been up since 3 a.m.
Feeling mental.
Because the time difference is bad, but it's actually not that bad for us, for those of us in Europe. You don't really start to have the upper hand until the finale, which is at 3 a.m. UK time.
Yeah, it's funny that, isn't it? It's 9 p.m. here, which is kind of almost prime time, or at least 9 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern, very nice 7 p.m. Pacific time. Yeah, it is interesting that. I wonder if they did that thinking the US would get to the final and then they want the prime time for the US.
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, without getting into too much kind of politics around it, NBC, a bit like Discovery / Eurosport, have a massive rights deal with the IOC. So they will be dictating a lot of the schedule in putting that sort of pressure on them. So for like the swimming events, because of NBC's contract, the swimming is normally in really good times for US viewers. So I imagine the same sort of thing was done with the Olympic women's football final, because highly likely US might be involved. So they put it at a time that kind of suits that sort of time zone. So yeah, going to be an interesting one for those of us who are doing an all-night rave, late night women's footy after dark sesh, but fun times for you. But let's get into the action that actually happened today.
Let's get to the games.
Four brilliant quarterfinals. I don't think we could have asked for much more, to be honest.
No, I mean, three out of four went to extra time. So that's... Wait, am I right?
Yeah, three out of four went to extra time. Sweden was the only game that went
out of four went to extra time.
Didn't go to extra time. Team GB Australia didn't go to penalties. Two of them went to penalties. So we got two penalty shootouts, which if you're a neutral is bliss. We had extra time, crazy energy, where we had missed penalties, deflected goals.
Offside goals.
I think we had, what, four offside goals in the USA-Netherlands game? More than that?
Maybe three.
Yeah,
three
it, was, it was good. It was good, clean fun. What game do you want to start off with first? Do you want to start off with GB?
Let's go in reverse emotional order. Okay. So maybe we'll start with Sweden Japan, then
wow,
go
you're
to
edgy.
Maybe
That's
the last
really
time we
edgy
see.
Start.
Yeah, let's get rid of Sweden Japan, and then we'll go to maybe saying goodbye to Formiga and Marta for the last time at a major tournament, and then we'll go USA, and then we'll end with GB. So yeah, Sweden 3, Japan 1. Flo, this probably kind of went as many people saw it going, depending on either the flow of the game or certain score lines, but Chelsea's Magda Eriksson gets the scoring underway very early on. Mina Tanaka comes through with the equaliser, which maybe surprised people. Japan, we talked about it in our preview pod, are kind of a fun team. They like to play the ball, but definitely have a lot of issues and have been quite slow to warm up in this tournament, although a lot of teams have been quite slow to warm up. Stina Blackstenius gets the second half underway in a good start for Sweden 2-1, and then Asselani is the icing on the cake, and the Swedes are through to the semi-final. And sadly, Flo, the hosts are out. What are your feelings on this one?
Well, firstly, I think Japan put in their best performance of the tournament when it mattered, which
That's
was
fair.
Great. And they could have been 2-1 up at one point when that kind of soft Tanaka penalty was ruled out by VAR, which I think was the right decision because she kind of bought it, really. She actually hit Ilestet and then fell over. So I thought that was a bit harsh. But Iwabuchi was seconds away from getting to be able to take that penalty and potentially putting Japan 2-1 up. But I think in the end, it was just a case of Sweden were too good. Sweden were too good and Japan offered too little to be able to claw their way back into the game, because Sweden have shown so much going forward this tournament. They're such a threat that like Japan were never going to have enough opportunities to match that. And there was an obvious size difference as well. Like that Eriksson goal, I think, being a prime example. Japan just can't match them on those levels. So
yeah, I really like the way the Swedish manager put in Magdalena Eriksson at left back here. I think Obviously, a lot's been made of John Anderson, also a Chelsea player, very good going forward, maybe sometimes a liability at getting back. And obviously, Japan had a lot of the ball. They're very comfortable, confident side at passing. But I think Sweden went for a more kind of obtuse, obstructive lineup. And I think it really worked, like you said, getting that kind of goal, which they just can't compete with Sweden on early on. And I think it's a good sign that Sweden, I think, haven't got enough credit for being adaptable, for having multiple ways of playing. Hannah Glass has been fantastic this tournament. But they've also had other players kind of step in and out. And I think it was a good game for maybe seeing other Swedish players step up and not having to play one way. And they can play a game like this where they don't have as much of the ball and they're still pretty devastating. And I think we saw maybe at the end, kind of back half of the group stage, they were able to be a more dominant team in certain games as well. So like you said, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, totally. I think Blackstenius is having a really good tournament. And I think, yeah, I think Sweden are just changing the narrative around them. I think coming into this, everyone thought they were just a well-organized, static team that's a threat from set pieces, but they've shown that they can be so much more. They're actually much more creative, I think, like, actually,
yeah,
and much better at playing through the lines. And I think a lot of people have maybe given them credit for, or just kind of imagine them to be like in the past. And maybe also when it comes to Aslani, like we didn't maybe quite see the best of her during that World Cup. I feel like she came into the World Cup with quite a big reputation, whereas I think she's really performed really well at this tournament and kind of really lived up to her billing in a way. So I think that's brilliant as well.
Well, and I think one thing to keep in mind, that the narrative of this tournament has been no one can defend, right? And we saw that again today in the USA game, in the GB game. So maybe Sweden are also going into the semi-finals is probably the best defence left in the competition. And that is a huge thing to be carrying with them.
Next,
Canada 0, Brazil 0. Flo, this was a really tough game to watch because I think both teams ran out of steam a little bit. And it was a very emotional ending and a very emotional penalty shootout, won by the brilliant Steph Lab, making two fantastic saves and looking so fired up on the Canada sideline. But I thought Bev Priestman deserves a lot of credit because I thought she got her game plan right. She pressed high. She kind of gave her Canadian players that spirit that often they've kind of not had. They've all often been criticized for not having that kind of USA Lions winners mentality. And they really had that today. They got in Brazil's face. And I think they did run out of steam a little bit and Brazil were able to get in the game and play a lot of passes. But they did really well to make sure that even when Brazil had the ball, there wasn't necessarily the space for them to make something happen. And I thought Canada were really brilliant today, especially Nichelle Prince, Jess Fleming, Ashley Lawrence, maybe the best right back in this whole tournament. It's been fantastic for them. So I think they deserve a lot of credit for coming out strong and being attacking early on and then kind of reducing Brazil to not having much. It wasn't a great extra time this. You kind of really felt it was going to be 0-0 and then penalties. But they got there. They won the penalties. You obviously need a bit of luck. And yeah, I think we'll kind of remember this game for the scenes of Formiga getting subbed off at the end. Probably the last time we'll see her after 7 Olympics. And yeah, Marta's mini speech in the huddle at the end. I know I had a lot of people kind of emotionally moved.
Yeah, I think all of the games had that, to be honest. I think I loved watching the end of the Eurosport streams to be able to see the kind of post-match emotion. Japan and Holland games especially were really heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, the Japanese players, you really felt like they were...
Yeah,
this meant so much.
I guess in reality, like, they just didn't have the quality that they needed to ever get a medal. But you would like to think that kind of, like, emotion and being the home nation was going to be enough, but it wasn't. I think what I find really surprising about this Canada team is it almost feels like that's flipped now. It's like, obviously they have talented players, yes, that's without a doubt. You've already listed off a whole bunch of names, and the fact that so many of their players are playing in the best clubs in Europe shows that. But at the same time, I feel like actually Canada are playing above themselves right now. And I actually think they're playing on a higher level. And they're now actually playing much more on emotion and character and belief than they ever have before. And, you know, I don't think they're punching above themselves because, yes, on paper, like, they still have Christine Sinclair, although I don't think she's had an amazing tournament. She hasn't even featured in...
No, she missed a penalty today as well, which I think
she didn't even feature against Team GB. She took a big knock today as well. So it's just a funny one. Like, I just feel like we haven't seen Canada at their best yet at all. And that's why I feel like they're almost carrying themselves at the moment on pure belief, because they obviously have quality there, but they haven't been able to kind of show that yet. And that's what Bev Priestman has said the whole entire time I've said on this podcast, probably said on loads of other podcasts, is she wants them to believe and have confidence. And probably that's the final piece of the puzzle. And that's probably what's missing massively from Team GB, I think, is just like loser mentality all the bloody time.
You know, what I will say though, Flo, is that sometimes you don't need to play the best football or kind of set yourself up to have your best players have these mercurial moments. And I think that's what's cool about the Canada team, is that, yes, they have the squad. Yes, you're saying they're playing above themselves, but I think they're playing as a team.
Oh, no, massively.
And I
massively.
Think sometimes that's
there's
more
a,
valuable.
There's a brilliant connection. And I think you said Lab, but I'm going to say Labe, because she's got an accent on the end of her last name.
Labe.
End of her last name, yeah. But, I mean, that's a sign, really. Like, it sounds really cliche, but ridiculous.
Well, and she's sort of the number two keeper as well.
Kind of character and luck in some ways as well, because in that game against Japan, that group game, Iwabuchi's penalty was terrible, but that kind of gave Canada a lifeline. And at the same time today, I think Raffaele's penalty wasn't brilliant either. So it's like Labadee's done has been like particularly like incredible. I think Alyssa Nair's penalty shootout performance was stronger in terms of what she had to do, but
they were very different.
But I still think, you know, that creates an energy. Like, you ride that wave of like, oh my god, yeah, she's done it. When not, well, I'm gonna sound like such an idiot here, but it's like, it's almost like she shouldn't have to work that hard to do it. But considering the elements that they've come up against, like her being constantly with the physios on the pitch every 5 minutes, that entire game, really, regardless of the players, it was like Brazil, Canada players going down left, right and centre. Like, it's good to have that kind of narrative, because I think that drives you when you're like, our backs are against the wall and we've still done this.
Well, the point I want to make, kind of going off that, is how much these two goalkeepers, Steph Lab for Canada and Naya for, I was about to say Chicago, for the USA, I think they really kind of embodied and were a metaphor of where these teams are at. And I think you're right, Steph Lab raised the emotion for Canada. She kind of took them to a place where they needed to be, got them to a level of intensity, a level of belief that they hadn't gone before. And I actually think Nair did the opposite for the USA. I think the USA have had too much pressure. I think they've been too loose. I think they've been too wound up, too jittery, too nervous. Nair was cool as ice today. And you should go and watch these penalty kicks, the Canada-Brazil ones and the USA-Netherlands ones, because they're so different
massively.
In their approach. Steph Lab has got a tongue out. She's doing a starfish thing. She's running down the line. She's intimidating. She's having a word to the Brazilian players. She's giving it everything she can to try and make a stop. And like you said, maybe she forces a more poor, weak penalty, and that gives her the save. Denier looked like she was kind of on a vow of silence and was there, you know, in an ice bath. And I think the USA needed that. They needed someone to say, hey, we've got this. We've been here before. We've done that. Because I think, despite their vast amount of medals and history of success and winning mentality, I think the USA, and we'll get to them in a minute, I think they've been really loose and messy this tournament. And I think Anaya's memorable performance today will go down as this moment where someone kind of stood up and said,
yeah,
it's okay,
but you know what's really interesting,
breathe.
As well, is that, like, actually as a goalkeeper, she's a little bit, but like in penalty shootouts, she's really, and penalties in general, she's really reliable. Yeah, I thought actually in game, she Nair always looks quite shaky. And I think she showed signs of that today. I mean, she made a mistake that ended up in that goal that got disallowed by Mertens. That
yeah,
was a
the one
really
off the
bad
bar.
Mistake.
Yeah.
But then for some reason, when it comes to penalties, we saw that in the World Cup with the Steph Horton pen, saw it today with the Mertens pen in the game, and we saw it in the shootout. Like, she's just a different animal when it comes to shootouts. Whereas there's almost like she gets these in-game nervousness energy where she feels the tension. But in those moments, she's like, this is my kind of arena and I'm going to dominate.
Well, let's get to the kind of putting a little bit more meat on the bone of the Netherlands-USA game there. It finished 2-2 after 90 minutes, 2-2 after 120 minutes. And then, yes, the USA won 4-2 in the penalty shootout. Two saves in the penalty shootout by Alyssa Nair, and a penalty save in the 81st minute from Lieke Martens. It was a phenomenal goalkeeping performance, and I think something that will go down in history. Listener, you have to remember that the USA went out at this exact spot to Sweden at the 2016 Olympics, missing in a penalty shootout Kristin Press back then. So I think Kristin Press, who stepped up at number three for the USA, when she nailed that penalty, I think you felt like there were some ghosts, some spirits being exercised on the pitch. And yeah, it was a good all-round kind of team penalty shootout performance. Megan Rapinoe's winning penalty was glorious, as well as obviously Alyssa Nair kind of stealing the show. What jumped out to you from this one, Flo, beyond Viv Miedema, obviously a queen, very good refereeing at this tournament, so many correct offside calls, it's obnoxious. And yeah, where do you stand on the United States of America experience?
I thought this was the best they played. I think there's a lot of question marks still, though, around tactics and selection. I think they created a lot. If they had managed to stay onside, it could be in a very different story. But I think they made the Netherlands nervous, and they forced them to make mistakes. I think Holland has shown this entire tournament that they can be a little bit all over the place at the back, and there were moments where you felt like the USA were going to capitalise on that, but basically just couldn't stand onside. And I think the US really grew into the game, and I thought they were going to win it in the second half of normal time, and then I thought they were going to win in extra time because the momentum was just so with them, and I think keeping things level gave them so much confidence and belief that, especially when, as soon as the whistle went for penalty shootout, I thought that USA were definitely going to win. They just had a confidence and an air about them that they knew that they had it. And I think it's almost, I felt like the Netherlands knew that they had to win it in extra time. Otherwise, there was good. It felt like that. It felt like that sort of energy.
Yeah. I kind of felt like the Netherlands were going to win right up until Viv missed that penalty. And then I was just like, oh, Nair's got this absolutely locked down, and the way Viv reacted to that and the way she turned around and looked at her teammates, I just thought, oh, it's gone, and the US will kind of ease this out. And especially once Kristin Press nailed that third penalty, you knew it was in the bag. I think it was a funny game because, you know, you talk about selection. We both love seeing Lynn Williams. I think we've been really complimentary of her on this podcast since we started, and she's sort of, it sounds crazy, but underrated as a player, and she's a much better player on July 30th, 2021, than Alex Morgan and Carly Lloyd. And maybe you could argue Megan Rapinoe as well. Probably not Kristin Press, but probably better than Tobin Heath. You know, she is, whether it's as a wide forward or as a centre forward or as a pressing forward, as a defensive forward, she can play all these roles. She is the best at the USA right now. And yet she doesn't really get the game time. She's the top NWSL scorer of all time, top NWSL assister of all time. And yeah, she's been left off the last two tournament squads for USA. So I think this is a bit of a coming out party, and it was so overdue. So to see the USA look so sloppy and out of sorts early on, they go down to that very, very nicely taken Viv Miedema goal where she absolutely stole Kelly O'Hara's soul. RIP Kelly O'Hara, a player who maybe he's had a terrible tournament, maybe the worst player for the USA again today, but also in general. She gives away the penalty in the second half. But yeah, I think after that start, I was actually pretty impressed. Like you said, the selection going forward, having the Williams starting, having Sam Mewis score a header, look herself again after a few poor performances. I think you got to give the USA credit for coming back. And like you said, they kind of stole the momentum. And for a large portion of the game, I actually thought the USA was going to go on to win 2-1, 3-1, you know, 4-2 or something. And then, yeah, I kind of disagree with you in that in the 90 minutes, you know, when Lieke Martin steps up to take that penalty, I really thought, oh, the Netherlands are going to take this back. And I really started believing for the Netherlands again. And I wondered what your take was on this. Do you think Lieke Martin's got psyched out because there was a 2-minute VAR check while she was waiting on the penalty spot?
Potentially. I imagine that can be tricky for a lot of players. Like, the quicker the better, really. You don't want to be standing there thinking about it, staring at the goalkeeper who's staring back at you. I think, and we're going to go on to talk about Team GB, but I think, especially if you make it too obvious, like Caroline Weir did, like if your setup is too obvious with where you're going, that doesn't help. But I think all the penalties in this tournament, are, like in normal time especially, have not been brilliant.
I actually thought Nair's save of Mertens in regular time, so the 81st minute, I actually thought that was the best save of the bunch, because what Mertens does is, maybe she telegraphs it too much, but she actually tries to send all her body language the other way. So she like bends her right shoulder, she bends her left leg, and she directs all her energy to the left corner, and then she bends it to the right. And so Nair essentially sees her looking one way and goes the opposite. So you could argue maybe that was too obvious, but I actually think that was the best of Nair's saves, because I thought Mertens tried to hide it. When you rewatch it, she really didn't kind of, she didn't just stick with one direction. She tried to bend it halfway through. And maybe you could argue that because Mertens changes her body language like through the strike, that that actually affects her execution. That's a fair criticism. But I thought that that save for me was the best of the bunch.
Yeah. I mean, I think so many of the penalties in this one have been at a really savable height. And I mean, they all blend into one, but I can't quite remember the difference between Lucas Martin's penalty and some of the others that have been at that nice height that you get where you don't quite have to, you know, dive to the floor to get it.
Considering how beatable the USA have been in this tournament, especially we've seen in the Sweden games, you know, in the Australia game, they were shaky. Even, in, you know, for a large portion of the first half, they were pretty shaky against New Zealand. How gutted do you think the Netherlands will be knowing that this is pretty much as good a chance as you'll get to beat the USA?
Oh, massively, massively. I think what shone through for me, though, was I think they were more gutted because it was their last one with Serena Wiegman, and that's what they really wanted to do, is win something with her. I mean, obviously they've won the Euros, but got to the World Cup final, which is a huge achievement. Lost to a really, really good USA side. And yeah, like you said, they will know that they had what it takes to beat them. They really did have what it takes to beat them this time. And it's just such a cruel way to lose as well, after a really good performance. So I think they'll just be hitting themselves, really, how they let that one slip.
What I will say about going back to selection and kind of the momentum of this game, I do think that Vlatko's substitutions were really suspect.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I saw on social media, kind of a lot of people being like, what the hell is going on with these subs?
Yeah, it was obviously he took off Lynn Williams, he took off Sam Mewis, who started this game so well, and I think Carly Lloyd was just completely slowed the game down and had a really heavy touch and did not keep up the same type of pressing and pace that and kind of verve and fluidity that we saw early on, and I think that was really frustrating. I also think, you know, set pieces were poor today, whether it was Tobin Heath, whether it was Megan Rapinoe. There was one in the second half where Rapinoe hooks it from the right hand side, it goes straight out of bounds, and I do think Chrissy Mewis would have offered something. Maybe I'm being a bit biased there, kind of covering the Houston dash, but I think it would have been nice to have Mewis, Christy, offer something different. And also, just when is Casey Kruger going to get a game? I think just having Emily Sonnet, one defender on the bench, was really dodgy decision from Vlatko, because he could have maybe moved things around, moved Crystal Dunn forward. We would have loved to have seen that. Didn't really have that offer. And Emily Sonnet's a bit of a wild card, so I can understand that in a game this tight, this tense, going on 2 hours, you don't really want to bring on Emily Sonnet. But it would have been great to see Casey Kruger in the squad. Would have been great to see Midge Purse in the squad. I know I'm getting quite frivolous by saying that. Or even just seeing more defenders. Tiana Davidson wasn't there, so you couldn't really move around and make more of a back three or get creative. I think Vlatko put himself in a bit of a corner, and the US got less and less dynamic as the game went on. And I think that was frustrating to see. And I think on the flip side, Serena Wiegman had Lineth Berenstein in her pocket, who was a fantastic player, caused all kinds of problems today at the end of the game and in extra time. And I thought was really unlucky not to be on the winning side, because she kind of, the way she changed this game and gave Netherlands a new life with her kind of brilliant, well-timed runs and intelligent movement. And she's very good at using speed and then slowing down and watching how her teammates adapt and then playing a good pass. And I think, yeah, seeing Lineth do really well, I was kind of gutted for her to be on the losing team, because she felt like she had the perfect kind of game changers narrative. And yeah, she obviously was in tears at the end. Flo, before we move to GB, how far do you think the USA can go? Obviously, they're in the semi-finals, so they will play for a medal. But do you see them going all the way to silver or gold?
I think they'll beat Canada in the semi-final. I would love Canada to beat them. I just think that'd be so brilliant. I'd love that for Bev Priestman. But I think they're going to lose to Sweden in the final. I think now we're in the knockout stages, I think you do see a different animal when it comes to the USA, because you know that they are not going to give up. But like you said, like, I think there's a lot of questions about Vlatko's management. I think there's a lot of questions about the fitness of the players, the age of the players, the quality of the players. So I think there's just too many reasons why I don't think they're actually going to win this gold, and it's not going to be enough vibes that will just carry them through.
All right, you set us up for the heartbreak of all heartbreaks. Australia 4, Great Britain 3.
Yeah, I mean... I don't really have much words for this. I mean, obviously, anyone listens to this podcast, anyone that follows me on Twitter or listens to any other podcast I've been on will know that my expectations for Team GB this tournament were very, very low. So obviously, they surpassed that somewhat, and in many ways, because I said they weren't even going to win a game. So
it's the hope that kills
they
you.
They were
it's
undefeated
the
in their group games, only conceded one goal in that Canada game. And then looked terrible, but we knew from those matches that there was an over-reliance on Ellen White, there was an over-reliance on Lucy Bronze and Lauren Hemp to an extent. And what I did appreciate today was the fighting spirit, which I think has lacked at times from England, thinking about these England group. Obviously, I know friendlies are friendlies, but I've found watching England over the last couple of years since the World Cup has been a pretty miserable experience. So I appreciated the desire and determination that they showed right up until the last. And Ellen White especially. I mean, we are not worthy. Like, she doesn't deserve to be let down like that. And I know it sounds really ridiculous because I'm not...
I'm not a professional footballer,
obviously. But the way in which that Sam Kerr equalises conceded in, what, the 88th minute is just actually fully embarrassing. Like, I would probably get annoyed about that conceding that goal at five-a-side, like recreational women's five-a-side, let alone on the highest stage alongside some of the best players in the world. That is a fully embarrassing goal to concede, where you're letting the best forward in the world, well, one, no, not the best, because Miedema is the best, but one of the best, have a solid...
2.5 seconds?
5 seconds, I'd say. 5 to 10 seconds to set herself, let the ball bounce, pick out where she wants to finish, from what, like 8 yards? That is fully embarrassing. And I would, if I was Ellen White, I know they're your teammates, a lot of them you play with at Man City as well, I would be going full on raging in the changing rooms, because she has put her heart and soul on the line, busted a gut for this team, carried this team through, pulled them up from the brink, put them 2-1 in front and minutes away from a semi-final, and they do that. I mean, that would just fuck me off. Excuse my language. That would really piss me off. And I would be launching shin pads. I'd be full hairdryer treatment. Because, I'm sorry, you have to blame them. You have to... Like, I don't want to blame people, but you have to blame them. Millie Bright and Steph Horton.
Yeah, the way you were, like, not naming them.
But I'm blaming
you.
Not
naming them. Name them. Yeah, but then you called them out. What was more heartbreaking for you? I know what it was for me. The 89th minute equaliser from Sam Kerr, or the 60 seconds between Caroline Weir missing the penalty and then Sam Kerr getting the third goal for Australia? Like, what hurt more? I know we're comparing.
I think it was Mary Fowler. A knife wound. And then it was...
Sorry, you're right. Yeah, Mary Fowler's kind of wiggy, deflected, gnarly top bins goal.
It was the Kerr equaliser for me. Because...
Yeah,
because
that's exactly how I feel. Because we should have seen the game out in 90. For me, extra time.
And as soon as you go to extra time, you set yourself up for a fall, really. I thought it was heartbreaking to see Weir being the player that missed that penalty, because she's had a really good tournament and she doesn't deserve to be a villain in this scenario. Yeah. And I don't think she is, but it was another poor penalty. I think, you know, Sue Smith was mentioning in commentary, I think it is really difficult if you're left-footed and taking pens, because I think you do make what you're going to do probably really obvious, like which way you're going to go with your hips pointing directly in the direction of where you're going to go. Like, it's probably quite hard.
So she did the opposite of what Mertens did, which is that she swung naturally with the curve of her left foot kind of swinging away to the right. Mertens, who is right-footed, tried to open her body, tried to hide her body and go right to right corner. Weir goes to the more traditional left to left corner, hoping that that's just going to beat the keeper. But obviously, as Sue Smith was pointing out, you actually give the keeper a bit of an angle. The angle is tighter for you to get right in that corner. The keeper has a little bit more time, maybe half a second, a third of a second more to save it. So maybe the math whizzes, the geometry whizzes on that might want to have a word with Caroline.
Yeah, but I mean, the reality is, like, they shouldn't have been in that situation in the first place. Yes, and I think, exactly, you know, exactly before the
it's
game
not about
even
Weir,
before
it's
the
not
game
about
even
extra
kicked
time.
Off, I think most of us were looking at that starting 11 thinking, what the hell? Why isn't Millie Bright on the pitch? Why?
You say that, but I actually thought they started really well. A bit like the USA game, it's like people had questions, and then, you know, the first half, like, you and me were texting, and we were thinking, oh wow. I mean, I know they got
beat. Yeah, but
beat
that's
at
because
that
they didn't.
Piece,
they weren't facing anything because they dominated the first 15 minutes. So of course
Lauren Hemp, Kira Walsh and Rachel Daly all hit the post. If two of those go in, you know, this could have been a different story. I think what hurts for me is that on the attacking side of the ball, the Great Britain have been fantastic and they've been let down defensively. But I don't think it was 100% a selection issue.
I don't think it was 100% selection issue because Millie Bright was on the pitch when no one challenged Sam Kerr and gave her 30 seconds to decide where she wanted to shoot. So I think that would have made a difference. I think starting Millie Bright and Leah Williamson, which I would have done because I don't think Steph Horton's up to the challenge of being an international centre-back anymore. And I think most people are starting to agree as well, for those of us who haven't been saying it for ages anyway. And I think there is just it's just so frustrating that it's just the same issues that have riddled England for so long in terms of not being able to defend set pieces, not being able to clear their lines. I mean, I tweeted about how the fact that the way the defenders were just ball watching as the balls were floating in, like they were beautiful butterflies that they didn't want to, like, you know, kill. It's just like it happened against Canada as well, the goal they conceded, where the ball comes across the box and you've just got five players staring at it drift across. And then an opposition player has all the time in the world to finish off. It's just really, really basic things that are not good enough at this level. And if you're always going to be relying on someone to dig you out, someone who's 32 years old to dig you out, it just really doesn't bode well for a home Euros. And Serena Wiegmann has a lot of work to do. I'm really intrigued to see what she does with that back four. I think Lucy Bronze, yes, she's still the starter at right back. I think first 20 minutes of this game, she was really good. She was up for it. Then she struggled a lot in the second half, made quite a lot of mistakes, and she becomes that Lucy Bronze where she's trying so hard. And when she tries too hard, she makes a lot of mistakes. So we saw that side of her game.
There's another alternate timeline, though, where, you know, she makes that block on Mary Fowler. It doesn't take a deflection.
I'm not blaming her for anything.
It's so hard. I'm not blaming her for that. I know. I'm just saying it's so hard. These things are such small margins. What I will say, though, again, going back to that 89th minute equaliser from Sam Kerr that I think hurt so much, is when you look at the 2012 Olympics, and I think Steph Houghton and Ellen White are going to be taking this most painfully because they played on the GB team in 2012 and their time with England might be coming to an end. Is you look at 2012, England got blown away by Canada. You look at 2015, they go one down to Japan, and then Japan, they get one back, then Japan win 2-1. 2019, same things happens with the USA. So I think what hurts so much for me in this game is that Great Britain had the lead. They'd come from a goal behind and got the lead, which is something they traditionally have not done in tournaments. I know they did it and got a draw against Canada in the last group game, which I think for Heger Issa was a mental kind of block that they wanted to move through. So I just felt, maybe I felt too good, but I felt like they'd really accomplished something for 88 minutes in this Australia game. And then, you know, that one goal suddenly crashed all this growth in a heartbeat. And like you said, going into next year's home Euros, it just suddenly feels like, oh yeah, we haven't really got anywhere. And if anything, this loss is worse than 2019. It's worse than 2015, 2017, 2012. Like, for me, I was thinking about other tournament exits and I thought, this one feels almost more painful.
Yeah, I think because obviously, yeah, my expectations were low, but I think it hurts when you've had it like so close in your grasp. Like, I really didn't see GB throwing that away because I thought that Australia offered so little going forward, and they have really this entire tournament. Like, what they do is they pounce on mistakes, and you can't let them get those opportunities, and that's where we failed. I mean, that Alana Kennedy goal, Demi Stokes shouldn't be the player in that matchup. She is the player in that matchup, and she's always going to get beaten, like, size wise. And so that was a mistake. Yeah. And then the second goal, you know, we gave away, Lauren Hemp gives away that free kick, which we shouldn't, like, there were just sloppy free kicks that we gave away in our own half when we should be, you know, gamesmanship, we should be working out game management wise. We've got a lot of experience on the pitch at that point. We should be controlling the game better with minutes to go. We shouldn't be getting pinned back on our own half and giving away free kicks in our own half over and over again.
I think that's what Australia do really well, though. They play this slightly funny formation, which I think has caught people off guard in the tournament. They get caught the USA off guard because I think positionally they play so high up the pitch, and they don't really try and build attacks. Like you said, everything happens quite quick, quite direct, and I think that catches people off guard. And I think people forget that if you wait for Australia to bite, they leave a lot of space in behind. You know, Ellie Carpenter's playing at centre back, and she loves to bomb forward. Alana Kennedy is like a converted CDM / centre back sometimes. And I think they play so high up the pitch, Australia, that functionality, the 3-4-2-1, does give them a lot of positional advantage by having the extra wing backs, and Hayley Rasso was a more attacking option today. But I actually think they play it quite simple. And I think if Great Britain had breathed and taken a little bit more time, and I think Kira Walsh did this really well in the first half. She kind of really managed to find the gaps that Lauren Hemp and Rachel Daly could run into. And I actually thought Australia looked really exposed. And I think that's what's funny about Australia, is that I think Gustafsson's done a good job at making like their game plan quite simple and boil things down to Sam Kerr is going to orbit and take up space. There's going to be two attacking midfielders behind her who can run into the space that people will get attracted to Sam Kerr, push all the back line and the fullbacks up to try and press them back, and then you get that mistake, and then you can just lob a ball into Sam Kerr. Like, they've made it really simple, and I think the players are taking it on board.
Yeah, but I think what you can do, which we did for those first 20 minutes, is push them back and effectively force them into a back five, and that's what we did really well. But then as soon as they get possession, it switches and it's so hard to recover again, and that's what's so frustrating about not capitalizing on that high intensity, that high tempo, and draining yourself like that, is you're then left to try and pick up the pieces and you're exhausted.
Kind of, we've spilt a lot about GB. How far do you think Australia can go? They will be the ones playing Sweden in the semi-finals. Obviously, probably the toughest team you could get at this point. Any hope for the Matildas going to the silver and gold game?
I'm intrigued by Australia. I'm really intrigued because they gave Sweden a good run for their money in that group game. Could have been a lot closer. Sam Kerr missed that penalty, which I think would have been 3-3 at that point, or 2-2 at that point. It was 4-2, was it? So I think it might be 3-3 or 3-2. Can't quite remember. But that could have really changed the game in that moment. So they had their opportunities. I think they've shown that they can be a massive threat from set pieces, even against Sweden. And they're just really unpredictable. And I think that's why teams struggle to cope, is it's this kind of unpredictable nature to the way Australia play. And I'm intrigued, but I still think Sweden are going to win.
There you go. Flo, before we get out of here, anything else you want to add about the Olympic tournament so far? Players that have caught your eye, moods that have caught your eye, Twitter memes that have caught your eye?
A couple of emotional ones. I do think it's quite funny how every single person that plays on a winning team has basically posted this team or love this team basically after today's quarterfinals having won. It's literally quite funny, like word for word, all caps. I'm pretty sure every single player has done that. Also enjoyed the shade from Team GB and Matildas back and forth. After Lana Kennedy scored, the Matildas tweeted, pure passion. It was a picture of Alana Kennedy going like, yeah. And then after Ellen White got the equaliser, Team GB tweeted pure passion with a picture of her. So I quite like that. And then Matildas did a funny reply to BBC Sports tweet, which was Team GB are minutes away from going through to the semi-final. And then they went, oh, afterwards. And then Matildas did like a laughing gif to it. So that's pretty good. Susie Rack posted some quotes after the game about how Sam Kerr said that she was really surprised Fran Kirby and Millie Bright didn't start, and how that made her really confident, which I think was another... I mean, obviously, Fran Kirby, not sure that she's fully fit, but...
That's a dig.
Definitely a dig.
That's a dig.
And Miedema crying, man. It's not something you see every day.
And just
a bit of vulnerability. Like, I think we're all feeling fairly vulnerable at the moment. So just when the goats show it as well, really softens cold heart. And Shanice van der Sanden and Rapinoe after the game, that was a beautiful moment. Two great gays coming together and just, yeah, the best of the best, really.
Where is Shanice on the Hunometer?
Shanice is a top Hun. Great lipstick, great nails, great hair. We're big fans at Huns FC HQ. How about you? Any highlights?
Mary Fowler. I know that's
Fowler
not
five,
original.
Man.
She's
get
obviously...
on it. Watch their journey. The Fowler Prodigies, Fowler 5 Instagram account. You can see their journey to greatness. They've got a big family of talented footballers. There you go. Get them on the pod.
We should actually. Yeah, Mary Fowler, I think, has been a joy to watch. Again, like, I did a bit of an analytical deep dive that you can find on thestrikertexas.com, looking at the USA-Australia game. And I think because the USA was so consumed by Sam Kerr, we saw the best of Mary Fowler, who got a surprise start because Caitlin Ford pulled out in the warm-ups. And I think seeing her emerge at this tournament at just 18, obviously she's very, very hyped, wonder kid, you know, plays in the French leagues. Yeah, I think she's been fantastic to watch, and I can't wait for her in 2023. I think along with Sam Kerr, she's going to be one of the stars and faces of that tournament, and that's so beautiful to see happening. And I think we talked with Soph Lawson on our preview pod about what this tournament would be for Australia, and whatever happens, I think it's been a success because I think they've had some game plans that have worked. They've had some good performances. They've seen their star Sam Kerr put in performances that validate her greatness, and they've had new players emerge like Mary Fowler, so it's kind of a dream situation for the Aussies right now. Ashley Lawrence, I mentioned it. I think Canada right back's been phenomenal. A little bit of everything. I think, like I said, that Canada team really plays as a team, and so in a player like Ashley Lawrence, you see her sit back, show leadership, show intelligence, show tactical awareness, flip in and out of positions, be versatile. Fantastic delivery. She gets the assist in the GB game. Could have had another assist today. She was fantastic. Hannah Glass, Sweden, obviously we'll see more of her, as we will Ashley Lawrence as well, and Mary Fowler, all the players I'm mentioning. I keep thinking they're all going home, but, you know, tournament's not over. I think go and follow Mia Eriksson. I think that we've shouted out Mia a lot on the podcast in the past, but obviously knows her stuff about football in general, but obviously the number one Swedish football insider. So go follow them, and... yeah, it's going to be great watching Sweden in the semis and potentially in the final, or at least the bronze medal match. I think for me, Flo, I will be supporting Sweden. They have my blessing, and I'm excited to see them continue to adapt and show great football.
Amen, sister. Amen, brother.
Anything else before we get out of here?
Just great footy. And whoever said that it's not competitive
enjoy
enough
it.
And there should be more than 12 teams is an idiot.
Yeah, I guess the last shout out on that is Barbara Bander, who we didn't really get to talk about much because of the group games, but also a star of the tournament. Fantastic, and really showed that Zambia are a team to watch, and hopefully we see them in 2023 in Australia as well. One last shout out. All right,
see,
we've got to get some sleep. I've been up since 3 in the
morning. See you guys after the semi-finals, I guess.
Yeah, what's that, Monday? Yeah, Monday.
Is it Monday? Are you sure about
get
that?
Some rest. I believe it's Monday morning.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I've got to remember. Time will tell.
All right. Lots of love. Wear your mask and get some sleep because you're going to need it, because football is back and it's international football is bloody lovely. So yeah, Flo, great to see you. She's done. All right, good night.